Welcome to this week's Race to Dubai show. We will, of course, look back at what happened in Mexico. It was a fantastic event, and Patrick Reed came through and beat a world-class field to be the next WGC champion. His second, actually, in his very now illustrious career. Fantastic week for Jon Rahm. Tyrrell Hatton comes back from injury and was magnificent. Rory McIlroy had his chances as well. But perhaps the highlight of the event was the man on the first tee, the Mexican announcer, who was incredible.
And now, this is the WGC Mexico Championship. He did the players. LS, Rory McIlroy.
Oh, that was so much fun. His name was Antonio Vartens, and he had a ball for the entire week. So with that, I should introduce my two guests. Rhys Davies, European Tour winner, and Chris Ryan, golf coach, and of course, he is a YouTuber as well. Welcome, boys.
Very good.
Yeah, fantastic. Great to be here.
Well, well said, Rob.
Yeah, good event, though, wasn't it?
Excellent event. Great enthusiasm. You can tell, you can feel the atmosphere just from watching on the TV, and full credit to all the Mexican public for putting on a great show.
But don't you like the old school golf course? Again, another old school golf course. It wasn't long for these guys, and it produced some magic on the back nine.
It's got a different feel about it, hasn't it? I think the golf course looks different, it plays different. And for me, as a golf fan, I just really enjoy seeing the different shots, the escape shots, the Justin Thomas left-handed shot, the low hooks around the trees. I think we miss that a little bit in golf these days.
And what about the thin air, Reese, and tee shots like the ones you hit at sea level? 410-yard par fours being driven by Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, it's not something I'm used to, I have to be honest, Rob. But obviously, a lot of the calculations done on last week were based on a 15% difference. And if you look at the total yardage of the golf course, you're looking at it's about 7,345 yards. That equates down to 6,245 yards. So you imagine any of those of your courses at home playing on the weekends, that's the yardage the top players in the world are effectively playing towards.
Did you like the fact that in the last round they put a lot of the pins in the bowls? If you could find the targets, you were going to roll down to within a couple of feet. Did you like that?
I think so. I think it gave them a chance, but you look at the scores and it wasn't, you know, it was sub 20 under, so it wasn't as if they were taking their part and finishing at 27 under. So, and certainly there was a spell around the turn where a lot of them were struggling. You know, we saw Rory drop a few, we saw Rahm drop a few. So I wouldn't have said it was easy, but a nice blend of tight fairways and accessible pins makes for an exciting event.
And Patrick Reed came through. He was really stoic in the last few holes. When Bryson DeChambeau looked like he was going to be the winner, it was Reed that came through. And, you know, he's playing some great golf with a dark cloud over him.
Yeah, he's incredible to handle all that scrutiny and all that extra pressure, because we all know how hard it is to play the game, you know, at your own level, at your own rate, but to have this extra scrutiny on top of you at all times, it's very impressive.
Well, let's hear how much scrutiny he actually got in his presser afterwards.
That was huge because, our goal coming into the year was to get a win, you know, before we got to Augusta, try to get that momentum going into our first major. And, to be able to get it done before we even get to the Florida swing definitely feels great and definitely gives me the momentum, not only in FedEx Cup, but also kind of setting us up coming into the other big events coming up and setting us up for the playoffs. So, it's awesome to go out and get the win early, and now hopefully we can just continue to push through, keep grinding, and hopefully continue to put myself in these situations.
Patrick, given some of the things that were said earlier this week, did you feel like you had something to prove this week?
Yeah, I felt like I had something to prove to myself coming into this week, because I feel like I've been playing some really solid golf and just haven't quite gotten over that hump to get the W, you know, with losing in a playoff. And then, you know, to feel like I played some solid golf at Torrey. But then, coming into this week, I knew we were in good pattern, and, you know, I knew all I needed to do was, continue to try to improve on my golf game, but at the same time just block out all the noise, you know, no matter what it was. And I feel like I've been able to do that really well throughout my career, and growing up I've always been able to just kind of, when I get inside the ropes or on the golf course, just focus on what I need to do, and that's play golf. And it's always satisfying to come out and especially in a World Golf Championship and to be able to win, especially with how poorly I felt like I played last Sunday last year at this point.
Do you like it when you feel like the world's against you?
I'm used to it. I mean, it doesn't, it's one of those things that at the end of the day, all I can control is me and what I do on and off the golf course. And if I feel like I'm improving each day on and off the golf course and setting a good example for, you know, the next generation coming up, the children as well as my own children, then that's all I can do. And, you know, I feel like I've been doing a good job of that. And I feel like I've been growing as a person and as a golfer. And, you know, that's all I can really do.
He's been criticized by his peers. How difficult do you think that is for him to just block all that out and continue to play like he can play?
In some ways, being criticized by your peers is possibly worse. I think, you can't control what others think, particularly outside of the golfing arena. But, you know, golf pros, we're sort of proud of our sort of status within amongst each other. And if that's questioned or whatnot, then it's not very nice to deal with at all.
Well, if you're wondering and listening to the podcast for the first time what we're talking about, there was an incident, I think, before Christmas in the Bahamas. He had a sandy lie in some waste area, and he had a couple of practice or tried to put the club in behind the ball and then advertently or inadvertently moved sand behind to improve his lie, and that's what happened. And he was penalised. I mean, he got penalised for what he did, but the manner of it, it didn't look great, and he's taken some flack for it. So for him to come out and win in Mexico, I would say pretty incredible.
It's very impressive. I think it's one of those situations where we can debate it in the media and people can ask him about it. There's really only one person who knows.
It's interesting in other sports, though, when something somewhat similar happens, it tends to get moved on far quicker. But because golf is so much self-policed and therefore the integrity is so important to how the sport works, it seems to linger that much longer. And yeah, it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon.
How good a player is Patrick Reed?
He's phenomenal. I mean, he's had some big wins, obviously, a major winner, win some big events. And, you know, talking about the controversy around him, there's probably a few players on the tour who wouldn't deal with it as well as Patrick does. But I think he's very good at just, as you're saying there, just focusing on what he can do. And he's ruthless. Once he gets in contention, he very often gets across the line.
He certainly did. And, I mean, he's a predominantly a drawer of the golf ball, but there were a couple of shots he hit, key ones, particularly with the driver. When he had to slide it the other way, he could do it.
Yeah, he's been working on that shot for quite a while now, and it probably still isn't that comfortable to him to an extent. But you're absolutely right. There was plenty of examples of the ball moving left to right in the air. I think that golf course demanded that you had that shot. You couldn't just get away with a one-dimensional route. So, full credit to him. He's done, not only has he won, but he's doing one going against the grain of his natural play at times.
And what about Bryson DeChambeau? You know, a lot of talk about him. He's gone for the big bodybuilding program and he's put on a lot of muscle and a lot of distance, by the way.
He was number one ranked driver distance.
Right, so if you're wondering, how do I get longer, get stronger? It's quite simple. Yeah, eat more, more calories, pump some iron, get stronger, and you're going to hit the ball further. He has hit the ball further. Did you think it was in the bag for him with a few holes to play?
I did. Yeah, I didn't think he was going to lose it. I mean, he had that little stretch on the turn when he had six birdies in seven holes, something like that, and he just looked as if he was unstoppable. And he hit one tee shot, I can't remember which hole it was, and they...
17? Back the wedge and three-putted?
No, it was one of the tee shots, and I was thinking of, and he had a ball speed of 185 miles an hour. You're just thinking,
oh, that was
wow.
A tee shot at the par 5,
yeah,
15
he's,
probably.
He's really put on some distance. I think, you know, he could be another one who's pushing for world number one at some point this year.
And we talk about the world number one situation. Rory McIlroy started off in a blaze of glory in round one, didn't quite have that form through the week. Another top five for Rory, keeps punching out those top five finishes. He's incredible. He's now going to beat, after this week, Nick Faldo. He's going to be third all-time occupant of the world number one spot. He's now only got Norman to get by, although he's a couple of hundred behind him, pretty much, a bit more. And then Tiger Woods has been there for 13 years. But Rory's now the all-time number three occupier of the world number one spot.
Does that make him the greatest European golfer we've had on that basis?
I'd say by the time he's finished, he will be the greatest European golfer.
Right now, by that statistic alone?
Well, the thing is, you go into that conversation, Greg Norman, two majors, Rory's won four, but was Greg Norman a great player? Do you consider him a great?
I do, nearly
6 years at world number one.
Yeah,
I think if I put myself in Rory's shoes, I think he'd quite happily give up that third place in the world ranking for more majors. I think he rates that more. And
yeah,
I think,
there's no question.
Personally, I would also lean towards that, the majors over the time at number one.
But just in the Greg Norman, two majors only, you know, Padraig Harrington, three majors, two majors, is he a golfing great, Greg Norman?
Yes.
Yes.
You can't spend that much time at the top of your game of anyone else in the world and not be a great, in my opinion.
So we were talking about this, Matthew Fitzpatrick, a whole bunch of guys in America recently, talking about what is the cusp of greatness if you're looking at major victories? How many major victories do you need to win to be a great? So we were all discussing it, and we sort of came to Faldo six to be a great. There are a lot of major winners, but if you've won six or more, you're a great of the game. That was the listen before you start jumping in and getting excited. That was the discussion, and Billy Foster, who caddies for Matthew, said, "What El Señor's not a great. He's won five majors. He's telling me he's not a great." So he got all excited because Seve's won five, and we thought it was six. But now we're saying that Norman's a great with only two majors.
Well,
I'm just saying.
If I won one, I'd want to think I was great.
I don't think you're a great at the game if you've won one major. I just don't think you are. Or necessarily, it's got to be a collection of things, isn't it? If you've been number one, the world number one for 6 years, how many major winners world number one for 6 years? That's Greg Norman, second in the all-time list. He's got to be a great at the game, and yet he's only won two majors.
To me, they're two.
He should have won probably five, mind. I haven't said that, five or six.
Yeah, there was a few.
They're slightly different. Obviously, they're different ways to measure, but they're...
We're going way off track here, but yeah, carry on.
They're slightly different, almost, skill sets in that being number one in the world obviously is promoted towards very consistent golf on a regular basis on every kind of tournament.
If you get to number one, that suggests that anyway, doesn't it?
Exactly, that's my point. But if you are good at peaking for the big tournaments of the year, the majors, then you could be very inconsistent but win a load of those and by your definition be a great yet maybe not always feature as high up on the world rankings.
I mean, you could argue that the greats are the ones that have won all four majors, and there's five of those.
Well, there's not many of those. Yeah.
And Tiger have both done it three times, by the way.
Yeah. We're all expecting Rory to get there. I just really hope we're not in a situation.
Spieth as well.
Jordan Spieth, his three have all been different, and his fourth one will get him in if he wins a PGA.
Yeah.
Phil's, I think his window is shut. He's not going to win the US Open. I can't see it. And you've got Rory, who you must think at some point he's going to get it all right at Augusta.
Well, you'd hope so, but as I say, now just hope
we're
not...
There's no rule. It's not hard and fast, but
I just hope we're not looking back in 4 months' time and looking at Rory's record and seeing he's been top five every event he's played and not won one of them.
It feels like McIlroy's right on the brink of a real dominant...
A real run.
Like a 3 in 5 week wins or something along that sort of...
But there's a young Spaniard called John Rahm. Mm. Rory's number one right now, but John Rahm is coming for him.
And he's not going away.
And how well has Rory got to keep playing to keep flat batting John Rahm away from him? Because Rahm's not going to disappear the way he plays.
No, he's the young one. He's the fresh one. He's the hungry one. Whatever. He hasn't done it yet. Rory's already done it in the world rank in the number one in the world category and in the major category. So you got to remember, Rahm's still a long way behind. As great as he is appearing to be, and his form is suggesting, he's still got a number of notches to tick off before he gets to McIlroy's.
But he could have been world number one this week.
Mm-hmm.
Could have worked out mathematically. He could have got past Rory. It didn't quite happen for him. But he did have a magical moment in round three when he was on fire. This is what happened at 17.
John Rahm taking aim at the 158-yard par three.
Had a couple come really close. I assume Rahm's hit a beauty.
Coming to this hole at 8 under the day! It's a one bouncer and end.
Wow, what a reaction. What a shot. A one hopper.
And he's one of the more popular players here in Mexico. Has been in contention here in the past.
He came out of the gate like a bottle rocket.
It was a magical moment. I mean, watching it live, and when that thing jumped in the hole, he went berserk. The crowd went berserk. It was like, if you're going to make a hole in one, it was sort of like Mexico's 16th at the Waste Management. That's where the crowd was. It was incredible scenes, wasn't it?
Yeah, great. And obviously, John has that wonderful Latino spirit that the crowd were feeding off. He was feeding off of them. Yeah, and it was such a natural reaction. Mm. You see so many things these days in sport that are sort of staged or sort of put on, whereas that was pure just emotion, elation, everything. It was great.
And the stat for the par threes on the day was?
Average 1.75. 3 twos and a one.
So 7 shots to play 4 holes.
That will tidy up your scorecard.
That can't, in your head when you say that, he's played 4 holes in 7 shots. You can't make sense of that.
I can't comprehend it. I've had 4 twos in a tournament and I thought I was virtually invincible. I thought that was incredible. I remember it was the 4th hole in Dubai, par 3 down the hill.
Yeah.
And I made 4 twos
that
week.
Where was the pin?
Well, it was...
Wasn't front right again, was it? A horrible pin.
On the last day it was, yeah.
Is that when you had your 4 twos?
Well, no, I, throughout the week.
Oh,
so,
oh on the same hole, sorry, yeah, two on same the same hole.
Sorry, my,
sorry, I thought you were going one round.
Sorry, sorry.
This is a non-story now.
Yeah, yeah, you stuffed me. You threw me off my course then, I was going quite well.
Yeah, I thought you had four twos in the same round, because you'd remember that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he had three twos and a one, that's outrageous. How good is John Rahm?
He's not going away, and he's just getting better and better. If you look at where he is in his career and the age he is, you couldn't really have asked him to do anything more by this point. He's going along at such a high rate, and he hasn't won any majors yet, but he's so young, he's got so much time, and there's absolutely no way he will not win multiple majors. And at some point, be world number
one. Yeah, they're coming his way for sure. And what about Erik van Rooyen? Erik van Rooyen.
Great result for him, obviously. He finished tied third, top finish in a WGC. His career is going in the right direction and in a good rate. And what I like about him, he's got a very solid all-round game. There doesn't seem to be much of a weakness. I've played with him a couple of times. He's very long. His ball striking is exceptional. When his putter stays hot, then he's going to feature more and more, I think.
Has he got the most tanned ankles in golf, the world of golf?
I think it has to be. I mean, there's quite a short list of people who'd probably apply for that. There's probably only him that would apply for that, but he's certainly going to win that one, yeah.
I'd like to see a thick-set golfer with that look. You know, he's kind of tall and lean. You look a bit like him, actually. Well, you've been getting a bit of flack for that.
I get a few messages saying, great golf, but what are those trousers that you're wearing?
Right.
Put a hat on me and I do look a little bit like. Even the wife last night said, he looks like you.
Once you start swinging the club, though, there's a deception finish.
Oh, I checked my bank balance and there's no similarities there either.
Rory McIlroy, must mention him because it was his third top five in as many starts this year. He said, it was frustrating. I don't feel like I got the best out of myself. I didn't putt as well as I needed to over the last 3 days. I'm just looking forward to a week off and to getting away for a little bit. So, you know, fifth and disappointed, annoyed. That's where he's at.
Yeah, I mean, that's commendable in itself. It's hard. I think we all sort of feel the same way watching McIlroy. He seems to be...
He's two things. He's either the most exhilarating player in the world to watch, or he's the most frustrating player in the world to watch. He's got both of those in bucket loads.
Absolutely. You almost feel like you'd just like to see him a little bit more outgoing, a bit more energetic in towards the closing stages of a tournament to bring up that competitive instinct. The ultimate goal at the end of a tournament is to finish on top when you're in a situation like he is. So, I mean, fifth isn't going to do anything for him.
No, sure. He does give Rory his due. He never chucks the towel in, and he will fight and finish as high as he possibly can.
Absolutely.
Even if it's a dreadful time on a golf course, he will fight and gouge and finish as high as he possibly can. Because he knows that's what the greats do. That's what Tiger always does.
Are you sort of alluding to the kind of debate that's been around where you kind of look at Poulter and say, if Poulter could get into the mindset he was at the Ryder Cup, he'd finish. He kind of saying, like, Rory and Ryder Cup's got a little bit more energy and a little bit more...
I'm just more referring to the closing stages, because if his stats at the start of a tournament, lately in particular, are incredible. His stroke averages in the first and second rounds are fantastic. They don't seem... And they're not... So that obviously shows he's playing well and therefore he's has some understanding and a good feel of the golf course. You'd just like to see him... I don't know whether it's... I don't want to say free it up because he always looks free, especially with a driver, but it's somehow just like the killer instinct, the Tiger Woods.
Unfortunately for him, he's just such a talented player. We've had Woods in this time period that we're in, and if you make any sort of headway in a game of golf, in some way you're compared to Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
It's unfair. It's unfair to compare Rory to Tiger Woods. He's the next... If Tiger's not moving the needle because he's not playing and you're looking for the needle mover to come into town and bring people through the gate, it's Rory McIlroy. That's the guy. He's the go-to guy. So to compare games, Rory's game with Tiger's game, I still think is... And because he's so good and he's so popular, we tend to do it, and we shouldn't. Because in the end, the amount of wins he had last year, was it four wins last year? Mm. He's already won this year in the wraparound. He won in Shanghai. He finished third to Woods at the Zozo. He can't finish outside the top five, it would seem. But we expect him to win every time he tees it up. That's essentially it, and it's unfair.
I see Rory now as in, if it's a strong field like it was, if he brings his A game, he wins. Without his A game, he'll still be top five. That's where he is. I still think he...
consistency level is amazing.
And I think if every golfer on the planet now brings their A game, I think he comes out on top.
Yeah, I think...
And a poor week, finishes...
Most people would go for that.
But by comparing McIlroy to Woods, that is the ultimate compliment. And that is...
It is, but it tends to be in a negative way, though, doesn't it? It always tends to reflect negatively on Rory. And it shouldn't, because what he's doing in an ordinary world is extraordinary.
Oh, it is.
Tiger moved the goalpost and he changed the whole kind of how we assess a golfer and how we rate them.
I mean, you know, Tiger's looking for win number 83 and, you know, major number 16. He's still going.
Yeah,
he hasn't finished yet, Tiger. Yeah. So, Rory's the next best thing.
Agreed.
Tyrrell Hatton has had wrist injuries, wrist operations, or singular, and he's come back after... You know, a time off, you'd expect him to be rusty. How about his performance this week?
Really impressive again. I think, I mean, I imagine that even seeing the best surgeon you can, there's always that little bit of doubt in your mind as to what it's going to feel like following that surgery. So for him to come back out since November and have a sixth finish is fantastic.
Very good,
and probably going into the week, that would have been as good as he could have expected, really.
Well, let's hear from Tyrrell.
I'm actually disappointed. I played really good today. Just didn't really hold any putts, and then... I've given myself so many chances. I still had a decent score going. And then the last three holes are just is annoying.
You've got 2.5 months off your first tournament back. Have you exceeded your expectations this week, do you feel?
Yeah, I think so. So I didn't really know where my game was at coming into this week, although I'd kind of done a decent amount of practice in the previous 3 weeks with my dad. But once you get under tournament conditions, you just don't know quite how you're going to play. And I'm a little bit surprised with how I've generally played over the 4 days. There's certainly signs that there's a bit of rust, especially with the putter. That's normally a strong point for me, and I feel like I definitely struggled over the course of this week. But like I said earlier, if you told me I was going to finish tied sixth this week, I'd have been over the moon.
Okay, picks last week. It was Dan Roback, Richard Boxall and Bob Bubka. Let's see how they got on then. Everyone gets 2 picks, and because this was a WGC event, they didn't have to go outside last year's top 50 in the Race to Dubai. They could pick anyone they wanted, so 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, and minus 5 from his cut. And I don't think Patrick Reed is going to feature. Now, can you believe that? Bob Bubka picked Patrick Reed as his winner. 20 points for Bob as the guest. Richard Boxall went for Dustin Johnson, 48, 0 points, more like it. Rafa Cabrera-Bello finished 16th, so he got 5 points for that. And there was no cut, so nobody could have minus points because there wasn't a cut. Rory McIlroy finished 5th for Dan Roback and Bryson DeChambeau 2nd. Very impressive. Dan garnering 20 points. So it now stands at co-presenters 10 points, presenters 35 points, and the guests, Rhys Davies. I know this is you. You're the guest.
I'm the guest.
You're the guest. You're 75 points.
Running away with it.
You are absolutely flying.
Does that mean there's...
You're sucking eggs, Rhys. Co-presenters, 10 points.
I just got demoted 65 points.
You just lost 65 points.
2 seconds there.
Well, that's unbelievable. We'll talk about Omar in a minute. You can make your own predictions, however, each week by heading to europeantour.com to register for the Fantasy Race to Dubai game. It launches at the end of March, so plenty of time to get a bit of practice in. Not long to go, we'll make our predictions for this week's event, as I said, when we get to the Oman event, which is next up on the European Tour. And Jon Rahm, as if it wasn't a good enough week for him, he also was given the Seve Ballesteros Award for the 2019 season. It's effectively the Players' Player of the Year. 2 Rolex Series titles in the same year, and he was crowned the Race to Dubai champion as well. So at the age of 25, he must be thrilled with that. And Seve, by the way, is Jon Rahm's hero. Here are his thoughts.
It's unique, you know. I talk a lot about the history of the game and the history of Spanish golf, and with how much Seve means to all of us. To win an award recognized by your peers, recognized as the best by your peers, but also with the name of Seve in it, it's very special, you know. I mean, to be selected Player of the Year on the European Tour, it's obviously a huge accomplishment, but is this being related to Seve's legacy in any kind of way? It's an honor for all Spanish players, and I'm glad to be in there. I'm glad to hold that trophy, and I'm glad to be able to have it at home at some point, just to say at least I'm a Seve Ballesteros Trophy winner, and to join the list to the likes of Sergio Seve and the many other Spanish guys that have won it. It's a special feeling. It's hard to explain. It's very, very humbling. It's the best way I can explain it.
How much of an inspiration was he for you growing up?
So not that much growing up, because I didn't really know. I wasn't into the history of the game that much. Sergio and Ali were still playing, so they were more of a referent than he was, but it wasn't too later on where somehow I got across it and really started diving in on what he did and who he was and how much he influenced golf in Europe and Spain. And the reason why my family plays golf is because of him. So I owe him a lot. Because of what he did and how much golf grew in Spain, I'm here to where I am today, trying to accomplish a lot of the things he's accomplished, right? So hopefully this future Spanish player that says, you know, thanks to the likes of Seve and John, I'm here today and, you know, trying to make him proud. It's the best way I can explain it.
That was very nicely said by John Rahm. I mean, I had the good fortune to play with Seve loads of times, and I can tell you John Rahm would have been in his element playing with him, the great man. God, every time we talk about Seve, I think he should still be here, you know, knocking it about on the Champions Tour. And it's life, isn't it? We lose some great ones. Now, players' blog, you've got to keep watching out for these. This is really worth mentioning because Mike Lorenzo Vera is one of the characters on the European Tour, and he's had quite the career, ups and downs. He mentions €400,000 of debt. That's a lot.
That's a hefty amount.
That's a lot. And he says while hiring a sports psychologist has been crucial not only to him getting better, but his overall mental health. But you know him, don't you?
Yeah, Mike. Yeah, very well. Yeah. Known him for a long time.
Yeah, he's a top guy.
He is a good guy. He's a character, no question, but he's a really good guy. And he's a heck of a player. He's having a great sort of 18 months or so. His form's been exceptional.
Now, I think he might have to change psychologists because this is what he says in that blog. This is one of his quotes. He said, people want me to win more than I do. Every time I lose a tournament, I get stronger after it. So you know what? I'll keep losing.
I want to
change psychologist.
I'm going to read this blog. This is
I'm definitely
fascinating.
Gonna read it. Yeah. No, he's a top guy. So, and an underrated player, by the way. I think if he gets one, if he gets over the line once, I think there's more around the corner for him. Yeah, I really do.
I tell you what, though, I want to see the celebrations if and when that happens. Yeah. Because I can assure you it'll be decent.
And you know the French, they don't chintz when one of their players win. They turn up with, it's not Carver. They turn up with shampoo. They do the thing properly.
The whole thing.
Real Formula One thing when one of their players win.
Mike likes that stuff as well. He's he'll live it up if he wins.
Quite right.
I would sign up for that party if I was anywhere near it.
That would be one to get invited to. Invitation only though, probably Reese.
I would have thought so.
I think you can gatecrash that one.
No. I know a few people, but I would struggle to full on gatecrash.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, on the Race to Dubai show, we love a bit of Ryder Cup Confidential. This time, it's David Howell talking about his time that he practiced with Colin Montgomery. That didn't go well, and then he didn't see the Scot until the following Monday.
2006, the K Club. Ian Woosnam is captain, and we're in our first team meeting. And Woos has made a lovely inspirational speech, and eventually he's talked about our pairing to the following day. Howler, he says you're playing with Monty, you'll be playing against Westwood and Clark, and so forth. So I'm thinking, oh, that's a nice pairing. And as we get to the end of the meeting, everyone's filing out to go for dinner. And Monty just taps me on the shoulder. He says, Howler, just hang on. Ends up just myself and Colin Montgomery in the boardroom. And I wonder what Colin's going to say. And he says, Howler, he says, you know, we've always got on well. I just want to let you know that the reason we're playing together tomorrow, Woozy, he asked me 3 or 4 weeks ago, who would I like to partner this week? And you're my man. I said, really? He says, yeah, we got on well. We play in the Seve Trophy. You know, we've done well. We've won points together. I could just really see us having an absolutely fantastic week this week. There's no one else I'd rather play with. Anyway, the next day we start off and I don't make a par until the 7th. We lose to Clark and Westwood 6-5. I kid you not, we do not see Monty for the rest of the week. He obviously comes off the course and says, Woos, Howler is not my man. And I promise you, we got to Heathrow the following Monday and Monty says, David, how was your week? So quite good, Colin, actually. Yeah, 2.5 points from three. Yours? And that was as much as I saw of Colin the entire of 2006 at the K Club.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
No.
That is unbelievable. How can you... It's a 12-man team. You're sequestered. You're locked together. How can you hide?
It's a big event, the Ryder Cup.
I know it is.
There's a fair few people there.
But still, you're going to end up surely in the locker room. You're going to be in the same vicinity. I can't imagine that they never saw each other until the following Monday.
Well, you'd think they'd see each other, but clearly Monty's made a big effort there to avoid him for the week.
Monty was ducking and diving. Yeah. Make sure you go to the European Tour's Twitter page to watch Lee Westwood's Ryder Cup Confidential. And there will be more behind-the-scenes stories coming up as well. OK, next event on the European Tour is the Oman Open, right alongside the Arabian Gulf, and one of the best courses, actually, we play in the European Tour, I reckon. What say you?
I agree. It's possibly my favourite in the Middle East region. It's a wonderful Greg Norman design. It's got a good mix of long holes, short holes, a lot of water in play. Can get windy right on the coast there. It's visually intimidating at times, but it also gives you birdie opportunities.
How much are people going to be gagging to play again this week? Because a lot of people sitting out the WGC week.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, they'll be probably spending these last couple of weeks getting their game in shape and sharpening things up, and then you just want to get there and go. I mean, I'm sure Reese has got some better views on that from playing on tour, but yeah, weeks off must be tough, I guess.
Yeah, they can be. It depends which way you're looking at it. I think if you plan your schedule accordingly and appropriately...
It could come at the right time,
exactly,
couldn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
It could. Or if you've got form and you just want to keep going, it can come at the wrong time.
Yeah, form is obviously a big, big thing in golf. We all know that. If you're playing well today, you're more likely to play well tomorrow. But guys will look at this. There's a very busy summer ahead. So I think if they're smart and they've actually taken, yes, be prepared, but also be relaxed going into this week, you know, a bit more restful, I think that could be an advantage to those who are going to have a big summer ahead.
We're going to be talking to Joost Luiten very shortly, and he's already won this, a couple of years ago in 2018? So he goes back to a place that's got very good feelings for him.
Yeah, and he did well there last year as well, and not quite as well, but yeah, it's obviously something that suits his eye. Joost is an exceptional ball striker, very good, very much a straight driver of the ball, good iron player. Some of the holes which would be slightly intimidating to some of the players don't bother him, and he's only got good memories. So, yeah, he would definitely be one to look out for this week.
Well, do you know what? Why don't we ask Joost himself? He's live on the line from Oman. Joost Luiten, how are you?
I'm very good, guys. How are you?
Did you watch any of the Mexico WGC event?
I must say I haven't seen much of it, no.
Well, they had an announcer called Antonio Vartens, and he was giving everyone the big up on the tee. I just wonder, things like Erik van Rooijen. So I just wonder how he would go with Joost Luiten.
I don't know, but I've heard so many different pronunciations that I don't care anymore. I listen to everything. I just see it up and hit it.
How are you playing?
Oh, I haven't been playing competitively for 3 weeks, but the game feels good. We've been working on some things, especially the driving. It hasn't been as good as other years, so I've been working on that, and that feels good. So hopefully we can take it on the golf course.
I'm with Reese Davis and Chris Ryan. Reese, you got a question for Joost?
Yeah, I've noticed obviously your form on this golf course is very good. A win obviously being a big highlight. Why do you think your game matches so well to this particular golf course?
Well, I think it's a real ball striker's golf course. If you can drive it well and hit a lot of fairways, you can create a lot of chances. And it's one of the courses in the best condition. So if you create a lot of chances, you can actually hole some putts. And I love tight golf courses where you got to drive it well. That's my game. And this golf course is basically built for that.
Joost, Chris Ryan here. Will you be hoping for a week of windy conditions? Do you feel that helps you come out on top?
Yeah, I mean, I think always windy conditions help good ball strikers, I guess. And I don't mind windy conditions. Normally on this golf course, you expect windy conditions in the afternoon. You know, you're close to the sea and it will pick up once the tide changes. So you can expect some windy days. And you just got to be prepared to hit the shots, really.
Take us down the stretch, Joost, when you won in 2018, the last few holes. What were they like for you?
I mean, it's always exciting going down the stretch. And, you know, I played against my good friend Woody, Chris Woods. And, you know, he was one group in front of me. And I saw him bogey the 17th because he had his tee shot left in the hazard. And then I knew, all right, I have two shots going down the last two holes. And I thought if I could just par the 17th, which I did, then, you know, you got a two-shot cushion if he doesn't birdie the last. And it creates a little bit of air for yourself. You know, you feel like, all right, I need to do it now. I got the chance. So, and I hold a great putt on 16 myself. I hold it like maybe a 30-footer for birdie on the 16th, which gave me two shots clear. And if you look back, those putts are massive, you know.
That's great. Joost, looking ahead to 2020 now and obviously the big season ahead, what are you looking to achieve this year? What are your goals? And you know, what are you trying to achieve for the rest of the season?
I mean, the Olympics are coming up, so that's one of my goals. You know, it's always a special tournament. I played 4 years ago. I really enjoyed it, so I'm really looking forward to go to Japan. Of course, it's a Ryder Cup year. You know, if you can have a couple good weeks and maybe a couple wins, you play yourself right up there. So that's obviously on my mind as well. But at the end of the day, you just want to go out every week and do the best you can and hopefully a couple of weeks it all fall together and you win. And then it will take care of the rest, really.
How's your preparation for this week, Joost? Are you in Oman already?
Yes, I'm right. I'm on the golf course now. I'm just going down the first hole to have a first look at the golf course.
best thing where we're sat, then.
It's a great golf course. It's in great conditions again this year. And you know, I like the warm weather for a change. I've been in the wet and the windy weather for the last 3 weeks, so I'm very happy to feel some sun on the skin.
What's the one bit of your game, if you're going to work on the most this year, that you're going to sort of tweak and make better?
Well, you need to work on every part of the game, you know, but if I can have my ball striking, I obviously need to work on the short game and the putting, but normally when I'm on with the ball striking, I don't need to chip that much, so if my ball striking is good, I can compete every week, but obviously that counts for a lot of guys out here, and you just got to make sure you hit the ball well, and you know, that's why I'm working on the driver a little bit, because I felt like it was a little bit off, and then it's hard to play from the rough, you know, on tour, so I got to be in the fairway, and then I'll take it from there.
Obviously you didn't play in Mexico. How much are the WGCs a target for a player like you?
Well, I mean, they're massive. I've played the WGCs in the last 3 years, so it's hard to miss out on the WGC, but at the end of the day, it gives other chances in maybe smaller tournaments like Oman and Qatar. If you play well, you can play yourself back into them. So that's the focus for me. There's no point in focusing, oh, I should have been there. Just focus on yourself and work on the game, and then I should be able to play myself back into them.
Joost, thanks for joining us on the Race to Dubai show and taking time as you head into your first practice round this week. Enjoy the sunshine, you lucky devil, and make sure you do what you did in 2018.
Cheers.
Isn't it amazing when you've practiced, like Joost said, you know, 3 weeks in sort of rain and wind and drizzle and just horrible conditions, that first day when you get the sun on your back and you've got your caddy and your clubs and you're off, how good does it feel?
Feels good. It can be a shock as well. It's quite hot often in Oman. I've been there. It's been very warm. And, yeah, you've got to be prepared for it, no question. But, yeah, it feels way better than the cold and miserable rain.
Our producer thinks it flanks the Indian Ocean. I'm not sure he's quite got that.
The golf course. Yeah. There's definitely some water on the golf course.
It's the Arabian Gulf, as far as I remember.
Yeah, yeah, I would have said so.
Yeah, Indian Ocean, it would seem...
It's quite dramatic as well. They got the big boulders of natural coastline to block the waves effectively crashing up onto the fairway. It's got an Arabian sort of Pebble Beach feel about
it. Yeah, it has. It's really spectacular in its own way. I mean, it's phenomenal. Those closing holes along the water. I mean, that last hole, if you get the wrong wind there, that's a frightening par four to finish
with. Both 9 and 18.
Yes.
Different directions, but and the sea is on the opposite sides, but they're spectacular, but they're difficult. Yeah. They're real strong, strong holes.
I thought it was a really cool golf course, I must say, and one you would definitely look forward to going back and playing, as Joost Louten is. Give us an idea, Reese, of the people that are competing.
Well, interestingly, we got Martin Keimer's in the field. I'd be curious to see how he goes based on obviously playing so many majors and WGC events over his career, but he's on the outside looking in now. We've also got Brandon Stone's in the field. Pablo Larrazabal and Stephen Brown are featuring. Nicholas Kolsart's a big win for him at the end of last season, is playing.
How surprised are you that Kurt Kitayama's not playing this year? So, defending champion. He was in Mexico, so can understand why there may be a bit of a clash of schedules there, but you'd think he'd want to go and defend?
I would, yeah. You obviously don't know what's going... Well, you know, anybody's personal life as much as their golf life. You don't know what their reasoning or rationale behind it. But to me, you don't win many tournaments, so you might as well double up and try and defend as well. Yeah. But yeah, I think he's played in the States the last couple of weeks, so maybe he felt the travel wasn't appropriate. It is, you know, it's not easy to travel that far and have your game in order. But... yeah, I would have made, if me personally, I would try and make the effort, but I say he may well have his own reasoning otherwise.
I guess it depends. If you know, he may have a couple of invites coming up in the States, and then does he go to Oman, then back to the States, because he is American after all.
Of course.
Kurt, and all American players, when they start in the European Tour, are going to want to gravitate back to their home tour. So right. And that's Kurt's situation. So,
yeah,
so
I think that's fair.
Predictions-wise, we've heard about the golf course from Joost. We've heard about who's playing. Now you've got to pick two players, one from outside the top 50 from last year's Race to Dubai, and anyone else that you want. You're free to pick anyone you want. Reese?
Inside the top 50 on the Race to Dubai.
Yes.
And I'm going to choose Benjamin Hébert.
Very good.
Yeah, he's been threatening for a while. He showed signs last week. He played in Mexico.
He did play
signs.
Mexico, yeah.
I think he's due.
Okay, so I'm going to go inside the top 50. I'm going to go English, Paul Waring. Has been playing pretty solidly recently.
He's a good swinger. And, every time I watch Paul Waring, he's a good swinger.
Yeah, not strong player, hits it a long way. So
he's a, and as you said, it's a good ball striking course. Paul is a good ball striker.
Yeah. I'm going to ruin your two, your both your plans here. My pick is going to be Minwoo Lee.
Ah.
Because if I'd have kept him for outside the top 50 from last year, which he was, one of you two might have stolen him. So I'm going Minwoo Lee as my main pick.
Tactical.
Even though he was,
wow.
And he's already won this year.
He has, no, his obviously his form is
hits
arguably
the ball
as good
miles.
As miles, yep. And his form, like you say, is as good as anybody's.
So I'm Minwoo Lee.
I didn't have him, so I'm not.
So my planning and my skullduggery was to no avail. It was all rubbish. Now this is your player now outside last year's Race to Dubai top 50.
Martin Kaymer.
Okay. Ooh. Very good.
He started to show a little bit at the back end of last year. He's obviously he's not where he wants to be in the world rankings and in the Race to Dubai. He has had form in the Middle East over his career. I think he'll be hungry. And knowing Martin, if he's put a little bit of work in over the last few weeks, he'll be sharp.
I'm going to keep it all English.
You've nicked mine.
And I'm going Eddie Pepper.
Oh, I knew you nicked it. I just knew. I knew you were going to pinch mine.
I was surprised he was outside of the top 50. But
only just.
Just, 52, I think.
So I'm going to substitute Eddie Pepperell for another player. And that player shall be Max Kiefer.
Good player, Max. He's got a lot of promise. So, yeah.
We've got a lot of players in the European Tour that got a lot of promise, to be honest.
Depth is there. I think it's been there. Yeah, it's getting. It only seems to be getting better. It's very easy and understandable to focus on the top of the tree all the time. But, you just have to look a little bit further down the list and you'll see just how strong the tour is.
Well, of course, on next week's show, we'll look back at what happened in Oman and then we'll be looking forward ahead to... We're staying in the Middle East to Qatar for the Commercial Bank Qatar Open. Stay up to date on the official European Tour website and app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Thanks to Rhys and Chris, who just remind us who you went for. This is
I
always
went for cool. Martin Kaymer.
Very good.
I went for Benjamin Hebert.
Chris.
And I've gone all English, Paul Waring and Eddie Pepperell.
And I've gone for Max Kiefer and I've gone for Minwoo Lee. Should be an interesting week and we'll see who comes out on top in about 7 days' time. Almost exactly, in fact. And this has been an IMG Audio production for the European Tour. Thanks for listening.